Welcome to Northeast Colorado Talks here on Farm Radio 1010 KSIR and KSIR.com. I'm Chris Brom. My guest today, House Representative for District 63, Dusty Johnson, joins us via telephone. Dusty, thanks for being with us. I appreciate it.
Of course. Happy Friday to everyone.
Yes, indeed. A happy Friday to everybody out there and to you guys in particular at the state capitol. It has been a busy stretch, but we're about at the halfway point, aren't we?
We are about halfway, and the heat has been turned on. Well, the heat should be turned on physically because it's snow here and it's freezing, but some of these bills, the heat has been turned on, and we're going to start seeing some of these heated debates.
Speaking of which, sounds like you had a bit of one of those just last night. Is that right?
Yes, it was a contentious committee last night, dealing a lot with the urban-rural divide in my own party. It's the bill and the way that it's marketed, the intentions are good. The issue we have with government and good intentions is the nine scariest words. I'm from the government. I'm here to help. Unless we can get strong language to actually make sure those intentions come out and no other things happen. What I'm talking about is there was a bill for digital education materials. I love the concept. The concept of it is for education for our students, K through 12, when they're on school on the computers, they should not be having pop-ups, URLs are being redirected to pornography, sales for alcohol, sales for cigarettes. We all can agree that is amazing and we need to do that. The issue is the language is so open and not, it doesn't set any direction in principle for this policy. And the members doing it are very urban. And they're coming from districts where they censor YouTube. They censor a ton of things, and it works in their school districts. Except the way they're filtering it, I'm really concerned about rural Colorado. Because if they're censoring for words that deal with anatomy, genitalia, and we do a lot of animal ag out here for our kids who are going through agriculture classes. If they're looking up animal husbandry, breeding, you're doing a 4-H project in school on an off hour. You want to know the anatomy of cattle. The words are the same for cattle and humans, and that could easily be censored, and we're going to lose a lot of what we educate out here in rural Colorado, along with just a broad overscope of anything that has any kind of ad or popping up on it will be blocked or censored, and that leaves us just to public government websites that students can research, and we're really starting to censor what information they can look at. Both good for the intent of the bill, but also bad because now they're not going to be allowed to have full access to maybe some information they would like to look at for marketing classes and everything else.
So how do we bridge that divide? Because as a parent of a high school student myself, I know he vents some frustration to me about the limited access he has on his school computer to be able to do certain research projects and things of that nature already, because, again, of the broad scope of what is allowed and what's not allowed. So how do we find a way to narrow that down and still give kids the access they need to get the information so that they're not being censored on what they're what's available to them?
One would be, if you ever hear government, I'm here to help, go the other way. One for the urban-rural divide is local control. And if the government on the state level tries to do a one-size-fits-all and now our school districts have to follow that, they can adapt to what students need because maybe some of these filters are amazing for city areas, but they're not for rural and vice versa. But as soon as the government puts a blanket approach, it makes it hard for the local school districts to, you know, in Sterling, Colorado, you're going to report back to Sterling, Logan County folks who understand what the kids need to have access to until the state says no, because we did this blanketed overreach. So the big urban rural divide is really to take state out of it. We shouldn't be doing this overreach.
So basically your point is it shouldn't be a state bill. It should be up to the individual school districts to determine what is and is not allowed to be searched on school computers.
Exactly. And I mean, even with if the language could be fixed and it wasn't a broad brush of the scope, you could even add protections of if a vendor purposely allows pornography, cigarettes, alcohol through the system when they've been told no, it's a contract breach. Maybe that's restriction because some small school districts don't have that capital to go against some of these billionaire vendors. I get that. if that's all this is doing is protecting the intent of their contracts, but we need to very much narrow it down so it's not just saying that we are so scared that they're going to have access to something that we just don't want them to have access to anything.
And that was going to be my next question. Is there a way to specifically target the pop-up ads or the redirects or things of that nature, which is something that we've battled nationwide for years, basically since the explosion of the internet as a public access point? Is there a way to specifically target those things and then still let the schools decide in terms of search parameters what's allowed and what's not?
I think so. I'm going to be offering a lot of amendments because, again, I love the intent. We need to protect children. I will protect children every day to things that they should not be seeing. If we can scope it to where this is just a backup for local districts, especially those who don't have the money to have lawyers to go at this, and just say each local school district can set up their own contract, and if they put provisions in saying they don't want rated 13, rated 18 stuff coming through, we have AI, artificial intelligence information that we have the technology to set it up. They just need the parameters of the safety. And I'm going to put in an amendment saying, please exclude all agricultural terminology when it comes to husbandry, practices, production. Because again, as you know, it's the same terminology. And if they're doing a broad scope of you just can't search this word, and they're literally looking at it just to do how to learn to artificially inseminate, both AIs, which is fun to joke about, but if they're looking up for those purposes, which is educational, they should be allowed to do that.
You literally took the words right out of my mouth, because I was just thinking to myself, isn't it funny that we refer to AI as artificial intelligence, but out here in rural Colorado, AI has a completely different meaning for folks in agriculture.
It does. And, you know, this bill could maybe be an urban-rural divide where we point out both, saying we have the artificial intelligence technology to hone in on the contracts local districts want to do. Areas we are excluding artificial insemination education, and it could be a great way to say, look, there's two AIs. This is a different world that we're working in for both concepts. And it could be, no pun intended, while this is trying to protect kids in education, an education piece also of why rural is different from urban.
Well, and that's long been a battle in terms of the education is educating folks about what sets urban and rural areas apart from one another. Just playing devil's advocate here for a moment, Dusty, has the argument been floated out there that regardless of what the schools do or the state does, kids are exposed to this kind of stuff no matter what? When they go home, they have unfettered access to this kind of stuff on the internet. So is there even really a point to try to limit this sort of access, knowing that they're just going to go home and have unfiltered ability to do whatever they want?
There was, it was very disappointing in the committee last night. We didn't actually have any teachers come and testify. But we did have a teacher, one of my colleagues, and her concern, and she pointed out, I should have thought of this, my mom was a teacher. If we're putting the burden on teachers to be parents in the school system, and a parent catches wind that something popped through on the website, their kid was looking at it, we're up to so many lawsuits in our communities. It's a way just to take some of that burden off of school districts, teachers. Definitely parents need to be teaching. They have access to this outside of the school. We would be ignorant to think they don't. And that's all in parentals. They need to make sure they're watching their kids, especially, you know, like the younger ones, you're giving them technology. They should be safeguarding that as parents, if that's what they want to do with their kids. This just would take off some of that, frivolous lawsuits off of teachers. If parents, as we know, there are some, you know, that very much just want the school district to raise their kid. It takes that off of if a parent gets mad saying, well, my kid saw this in art class and I'm not okay with it.
Well, as somebody who is going back to school to get his teaching degree, I agree 100%, because we put too much responsibility on teachers as it is to sort of operate as parent/babysitter/teacher/referee, whatever you want to call it. I agree 100% that this would be one less thing they would necessarily have to worry about. Outside of that, Dusty, what are some other things that you've been working on throughout the course of this first half of the session? I'm assuming this bill is still being discussed. It didn't move forward out of committee last night?
Yep. So we're going to, I mean, like I said, I'll be working on amendments. Hopefully the sponsors work, you know, in good faith efforts, recognizing that it is not an attack on the intent. We all want to protect kids. We don't want kids accessing, you know, porn. I don't think anyone does, or a, you know, a 5-year-old or I guess a 10-year-old having ads for go buy alcohol. I don't think anyone wants that at all. It's just the idea of we need to make sure we're not putting the wagon before the horse, and we fix some of these things, because bills with good intent sometimes become very stupid, bad laws because we don't have those safeguards.
Absolutely. Yeah. We see that happen way too many times, where just broad wording makes things, again, with good intent, they become bad bills.
Yes. But yeah. So, I mean, that's exactly where, you know, changing the thing, though, because there are good things happening at the Capitol, which does not, it sounds awful because our biggest, especially for rural, enemy is the Gold Dome. But still talking about the urban-rural divide, education, I was the sponsor on a bill to eliminate student caps at Colorado State University for veterinarian programs. What that means is back in 1970, they thought that because it is getting state dollars, I get it, they wanted to put caps on CSU, saying you have to come basically beg to the senators and representatives if you want to have more kids in your classroom for vet programs. This bill just takes government out of it, allows for CSU leadership to operate on a free market. We know we're seeing a veterinarian shortage, small, mostly large. And it just goes without saying, you know, the more students who want to go through, and if they have access to those seats in the school, the more chances we have to get some of those out here in rural. I'm not saying it's a guarantee, but it makes it a better probability. So it just takes government out, saying CSU can now operate on a free market principle, and they can adjust with their teachers, their what money they have in the system, the student needs, and they can adjust each year on what they think they need the classroom size to be.
I'm amazed that that there was a cap even to begin with, that that was something that they felt needed to be capped, because it seems like we've always had a need for veterinarians.
Again, good intent back then. Now, I'm speculating. I was not around in 1970 to see what their intent was. I can just assume because they get state dollars, they wanted to make sure that they were reining in maybe the spending, saying we're giving you this amount of money. So we assume that this is how much money you can, how many students you can have in your room, because we don't want you to come back begging the state for more money.
That certainly makes sense.
I can see that. I can see a great intent, but the way it wrote is now CSU operates very much on many principles. Yes, they get state dollars. They get mainly they're a land grant university. They get a lot of federal, and they also get because students pay their tuition to go. So operating on a free market, take government out of it, they can adjust. And if they don't have the money for it, they have a you know, smaller classroom size. They don't have the teachers for it, smaller classroom size. They get an amazing year with a whole bunch of interest, and they can find the capital for it, and they can actually budget it correctly, because CSU, I mean, just like all of our universities, are really good at their budgeting. They want to survive. They want to last. Well, let them do that. So it's just it's back to the great intent, but really, what's the application going to be?
Absolutely. Dusty, we've got just a couple of minutes left. Let's end on a positive note. What do you got prospectively for the rest of the session for us?
Yeah, well, session and for tomorrow. So it was a promise. I really did mean it. I'm going to have a community roundtable in all 7 of the counties while in session to be active boots on the ground while we're going through this. So my second one will be tomorrow in Akron at Ease. From 3:30 to 4:30, community event, community roundtable. Everyone is welcome to the table. I want to hear what their questions are, where their frustrations are. Moving forward with that, some of the things that I'm specifically looking for is looking at well permitting in the South Platte, and how do we update those statutes? Because again, statutes are not being updated. I don't understand why the state has to be in charge of these, and we can't put it back to the basins and the special water districts. That's above my pay grade, but really trying to give them the flexibility to adapt in the changing needs of we have less water, where's inflation at, how can they moderate with the staff they have, let them do that as a board. That's why they're elected as a board. Another bill that I'm very excited for is doing a capital study for rural and frontier hospitals, because we're in a short budget. How do we keep our rural hospitals alive when they're seeing so many budget cuts, when we're seeing Medicaid being stripped both federally and statewide, and making sure that we get the care we need out in, you know, rural areas?
Well, it sounds like you've got a plate full before it's all said and done, but I really do appreciate you taking a few minutes out of your day today, Dusty. It was very insightful, and sounds like plenty of work yet to be done.
Yes, and the only thing I'd leave, which we all know it, it's just a reminder of anything with a shiny package and wrapping, while it might sound good by the media, you should dive deep into it, because while it might be an amazing intent, how is it going to actually bite us in the butt later? And we need to be forward thinking in that.
It's all about being proactive rather than reactive, right?
Exactly. And unfortunately in state, we, because again, the nine scariest words, I'm from the government, I'm here to help. We tend to be reactive because we want to push emotions through without pushing the facts as well to see if it's actually going to back it.
Dusty, thanks again for the time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Stay warm. I think it's warmer out there, and it's going to thaw out this weekend. So thank you.
Absolutely. Once again, House Representative for District 63, Dusty Johnson, joins us here on Northeast Colorado Talks. I'm Chris Brom. Thanks for being with us on this Friday on Farm Radio 1010 KSIR and KSIR.com.